From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In.
They believe that what we're being told is everything they need to know, and they just pay attention to that.
You actually have to teach the teachers how to teach for innovation.
With your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In with Denise Pope, senior lecturer in the Graduate School of Education, and Dan Schwartz, the dean of the Graduate School of Education. Denise is on assignment, so we're very lucky to have a sub, Dr. Marilia Pezzo, who got her PhD in education and now is working to help people learn to change their behaviors from things they might like to change their behaviors from.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's really awesome to come off the bench cold into the fourth quarter. I hope I won't pull a hamstring.
This is where fame is made. This is where you
love
make the touchdown run. So today we're going to be talking about learning as you get older. And we have a super, super, super expert here, sort of the person who's actually initiated all the work in this area. But I know you have, like, it's sort of in a Denise way, you've got some stump the dean questions.
Yes, so go for it. The dean. So Dean Dan, and Laura can pipe in if we're incorrect here, but coffee.
Okay.
Is it a longevity booster or a death accelerator?
Those are my two choices. Every morning I'm going to look at that cup of coffee and start shaking. I'm going to say booster.
Good for you. You are right.
Because everything about coffee turns out to be good, unless you have too much.
You know, they've been trying for decades to prove coffee is a bad demon of everything,
and it
turns out it's only good for you, for the most part. A new study found that people who drank 2 to 3 cups of coffee per day had a 12% lower risk of death compared to non-coffee drinkers.
Because they didn't walk sleepy out in front of traffic.
Right, because they were more alert to danger.
Okay, so that may not be longevity.
Okay, probably
not. It may be accidents.
Okay, can I say, I do think that's curvilinear, though. So you do get some benefits drinking coffee regularly.
Mm.
If you drink way, way, way too much coffee, it's like everything, right?
Right.
Then it's actually not so good for you.
Great point. That U-shaped curve is going to get me every time, because here I was getting 9 shots of espresso.
That's right.
Espresso right away.
It's always the answer.
Right. Okay.
Moderation.
So time out. Time out.
Okay.
Let me introduce our guest. So, because you said you called out Laura,
and
then
we
Laura
hadn't
spoke,
introduced
and
her yet.
And I want to be polite to our audience.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So today we have Dr. Laura Carstensen, who is a professor of psychology and the Farley S. Dickinson Jr. Professor in Public Policy at Stanford, and she serves as the founding director of the Stanford Center of Longevity. She is the author of A Long Bright Future, Happiness, Health, and Financial Security in an Age of Increased Longevity, and of course, being a professor, she's written article after article after article. So welcome. For coming.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Okay. Next question.
Okay.
We're done with the formalities.
Okay. One more question. Maybe two. Okay. Dogs. Are they going to make your life better, or are they just a food machine?
So I'm going to say dogs are going to increase longevity unless it's my dog. Which is clumsy and 85 pounds. And I suspect that it's going to take out my knee and everything with it.
Yes, but an ACL surgery waiting to happen. Well, you're correct in your assumption. So in Sweden, they found that in single and multiple person households, dog ownership was associated with a lower risk of death, a hazard ratio of 0.67, which means that they... 0.67 to every one death, 0.67 people. You
that's
know what?
Right.
That's a really poor explanation of
Laura,
hazard ratio.
Laura,
I'm going to leave that one alone.
Not a big effect.
It's very small. It's basically...
All right, well,
there is a finding in the literature, though, that dog owners live longer than cat owners.
Wow.
That's a good comparison.
That is. That's a better comparison.
And that's because cats shorten your life.
Yes.
Could be. My cat, yes.
Cats are predators.
Well, this is true. People think it probably has something to do with exercise.
Oh, okay.
So that would be my guess.
Walk their dogs, and they tend not to walk their cats.
Yeah.
So it's not because your cat takes you out. Got it. Okay.
One more.
One more. All right. True or false? Rich people live longer.
Oh, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. I'm rich. I get gout because I'm eating such rich food.
Yeah, but you get the dose of coffee.
Boy, I'd have to say rich people live longer just because they get better health care. Is this the U.S. or the whole world?
You know what? My person who is the fact checker did not tell me, but okay. The answer is false. In a study of people over 65, researchers didn't find a single factor to explain why some people lived longer than others, which sounds to me like saying it could have been a factor, just not the only factor.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that was a fail.
I didn't get it wrong.
Yeah, right. You're always right, Dean.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Laura, just to give people context, why are people living longer, rich or poor?
Mm. People are living longer for a variety of reasons. Some of it's medical advances, but it's not all medical advances. And in fact, historians of this era say that your garbage collectors have as much to do with your living longer than your physicians. That is improved sanitation in
thank
the
you.
20th century.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks for that connection.
Really, yeah. But it's also agricultural technologies that were developed that provided a steady food supply throughout the whole year. Again, something that's new in the 20th century. Mm. And these factors together really led to much longer lives.
So as we have longer and longer lives, Social Security, there's lots of societal impacts. Mm. Are there any that are showing up that we need to get on now?
Ugh, all of them we need to get on now.
Name a couple.
The little ones today, the babies, the kids in preschool that are, you know, swinging on the tire swings and climbing on the play structures, they are the first centenarians of the 22nd century.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really our job, our duty to build a world that's going to support them all the way through.
Wow.
These are the effects of near doubling of life expectancy are going to affect almost every aspect of life as we know it. Huge implications.
So is there anything education can do about it?
Education is the best predictor of length and quality of life. It predicts how well people can function. That is, can you live independently, live in your own home? It affects the likelihood of you getting a variety of diseases, but notably among them, dementia. Education seems to confer to people abilities to solve problems in their day-to-day lives. And so it's an amazingly important predictor.
But, well, so is the relationship like coffee, though? Is it curvilinear?
No.
Is there at a point where too much education?
Right, professors.
Yeah.
They're doomed.
Just too much education.
In fact, professors live a lot longer than average. It looks like every additional year gives you additional time in life. So it's year to year. When public education was put in place in the 20th century, states decided how many years they would require and mandate. And so they've now done studies looking back at people's life expectancies as a function of how much education was required by their state.
Oh, wow.
And people who had more education rather than less are living longer than those who had less.
For all the things we want education to do, they make better choices, mm-hmm. they're more active, they get more resources around them.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to remind everyone, this is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Mary Lee Opezzo, and we are speaking with Laura Carstensen, a full professor of psychology and public policy at Stanford.
So assistant professor, do you remember those days when you're trying to get tenure? It's like, oh my God, I got to publish this thing.
I am so old, I can't remember being an assistant professor.
Well, name chairs are very, very distinguished and given to people with distinguished careers.
I'm just eating my foot.
So, well, when you're done, we'll get back to you. So education, just to add more education, better. Is there something we could do within education to improve it? Like I'm in charge of K-12. Mm-hmm. Should I go in and teach kids a certain way that's going to set them up better?
Wow. Wouldn't I like to know the answer to that question?
Yeah, that's too hard.
I'm sure you are better at gauging answers to that than I would be. But the one thing I would say is that in this era of very, very long life, learning is going to have to be continuous. So one of the skills that I think we need to begin to teach children is how to not only learn something, but then unlearn it and learn something new.
Interesting.
Because that's going to happen throughout their lives.
So I have a theory, and this is not to be ageist. This is just, it may be tied to my family in particular, but as people get older, they get more stubborn.
Huh.
Which is going to make it much harder to learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
Is my N of mom and dad wrong?
Ends of moms and dads generally are wrong. Here's what my guess is, that it's less age and more about cohort effects. So the generation, the time in which you were born affects how you live your life. For example, life expectancies. If we in this room were born 200 years ago, well, I'd be dead. You'd likely be dead. I mean, you might be doing okay. You know, I mean,
so on my way out.
It's not about us as individuals or ages. It's about the world into which we were born. And I think if we think about education 50 years ago, you could pretty much learn what you needed to learn to make it in life by the time you were graduating from high school. And that was fine. You know, if you were working on a family farm, if you were in a business where you were going to do similar things over and over again, the world was relatively stable. And so you could acquire a body of knowledge and then rest on it.
So that's really lifelong learning. People change jobs and so it's an interesting problem, because most of education is very good at taking people from low knowledge to high knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a case where you have people have very high knowledge and you're trying to switch them over to another high knowledge.
Well, and the unlearning idea, it's very hard for me to unlearn things. Like, I have a rent control on my brain where, like, these lyrics from 80s rap songs will never leave, right? I can never unlearn them. So, and nor will they ever move out to make space for other lyrics.
You don't get the sweet sounds of Barry Manilow.
No,
there's just no room in there for that.
They will not come in. So how do you unlearn things? And that's really tough in a society that's changing so rapidly.
Yeah. Well, this is called the memory bump, by the way. That people have this tendency to remember music from their 20s. And it's different for every generation. And those lyrics just keep staying with us no matter what.
That's really interesting. Is that confined to like music? Do I have a better memory for novels I read in my 20s or...
It's mostly been studied with music, in part, I think, because it's easier to do, because you know the lyrics and the songs, and so we can do this.
Sirius XM.
Yeah.
You know, 7 on the 70s, 8 on the 80s.
But it does look like life is particularly vivid then.
Oh.
There's some just glimmerings of evidence that this might happen also at later times in our lives, though, when we're suddenly in very novel, new situations.
Oh, wow.
So it might be more about that. The 20s, for most people, they're being launched from their homes of origin. They're going into new places to live with new people, going to college. It's there's a lot of newness. And we tend to get less of that newness as we get older, but that doesn't mean we couldn't get more of that.
That's really interesting. So just to remind the listeners out there, this is Schools In with Dean Dan Schwartz.
I'm glad you remember the name of the show, guest host.
This is the floundering guest host subbing in and failing at Marilio Pezzo. And we're speaking with not assistant, but full Professor Laura Carstensen about her work and interesting knowledge on.
So that's the idea that exposure to novelty is sort of going to increase my learning, either because it triggers something or because there's just new stuff to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So as I get older, I find that my desire to go walk streets in foreign places is being replaced by, I would like to be on a cruise ship where I know where everything is. Is this an age phenomenon, or I'm just lazy?
Or is this something you should fight against?
Or is this something I should fight against?
Should you just eat, pray, love, move to Italy, and start over?
Awesome.
It's a complicated question. But it is reliable.
Yeah.
Your experience here is not only about you, that this is something that people seem to experience as they get older. We know what kind of music we like, what kind of food we like. Somebody says, oh, there's a great new restaurant, you know, up in the city. Why don't we go there? And you say, you know, I know my really great restaurant right here.
That's right.
I know what I'm going to order, and it's good. And people have interpreted this as an aversion to novelty, and in part because it said, well, that's new learning, and new learning is harder for people as they get older. I think some of it actually is about knowing what you like and also about time horizons. So when people are very young, they're in a kind of a motivational frame to explore the world, to learn, meet new people, take risks. And as time horizons grow shorter, as they do when we get older, people tend to savor. So they tend to focus on what they know and what's predictable and reliable. And
wow.
So, and we see this not only in people as they get older, but you see the same kind of thing in younger people if they're going to either suffer a disease or even move across country. Then they start to show this preference for the familiar in their current place.
That's interesting.
Wow.
There, so one of the so I've gone to lots of different places. I lived in Kenya, I lived in Alaska, and each time period that I've stayed in places has gotten longer and longer and longer. And I don't know if that's because it's more comfortable or that more has been invested in it and it's harder to escape it, to leave it, to let it go.
Or but, more that holds you there.
Yeah, more that holds you there. But it's not clear to me that it is a lack of appetite for new stimuli. Mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of what I'm trying to figure out. Is it me being stubborn?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it me being stubborn? I'd love to see new stimuli, but you know what? I really do like having the same breakfast every day.
But that's not stubborn, right? That's just knowing that you really like this. This is knowing your boundaries, knowing what you enjoy and enjoying it.
Okay, then I'm not stubborn.
Maybe.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think I'm actually pretty stubborn.
Okay, <right? laughs> well, that's a different story, but...
So I guess the kind of question here is, do old people learn differently? Mm-hmm. And is this a biological story or is it more a contextual story? So mm-hmm. Marilee, in preparation for the show, had a good example. It's should I, you know, the Geek Squad, they come over and do your technology for you. Should I give the Geek Squad new pedagogy for when they go to people who are older? Does that work? Is that too hard of a...
Right. Are they teaching poorly or is it that...
Well, do they need to teach in a different way?
Right.
Right. Because the older people are just learning in a different way.
I believe we don't know the answer to that question.
Oh, is that right?
What we do know is that it takes more repetitions as we get older to learn new information. But that means that you just need to go slower or repeat.
Right.
But it's not a different way of teaching.
Because they say, I hear this all the time, kids now, they learn differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cell phones change the way they learn.
Right.
And all that sort of stuff. And so I'm wondering if, you know, old people learn differently.
Right.
Or is it just they learn the same way? It's just, you know, slow down.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what they mean when they say that about young people either. So just to be clear.
Yeah. What does it mean to
learn differently?
Right.
Like, what is it that we're doing?
It means they can't get them to behave.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So on that note, we'll come back to this. But this is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Marilee Opezzo. We're going to have more with Laura Carstensen after the break on SiriusXM Insight 121.
Students focus on what they were told, not paying attention to the situation.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
So they're not going to see anything new because they're so busy trying to copy what you told them.
From the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dean Dan Schwartz, and subbing in for Denise Pope is Marilee Opezzo. We're talking with Laura Carstensen, and I just wanted to bring us back from the break with a little bit of outrage against Dan.
Wait a minute.
So you've been asking questions like, old people are the species. It's us. It's just us when we're older. They're not a different species that you see in a zoo.
I'm not going to defend the position that they are a different species. So you won. But they are, we're making special homes for them.
And for us.
For them, yeah, for us, really. And a set of issues that are quite different, I think.
Right. And okay, so the future us's, we can call them. and you know, one question that we left the break with was, you know, learning differences and especially with different time horizons and changing things that are changing really rapidly. So we talked about, my dad had a flip phone until the day he passed. And he, every time we wouldn't, it was so much just to get him to understand to use the flip phone, let alone check his voicemail. And every single time he flipped it open, I'd always have to scream from the phone, "Dad, put it up to your ear." And he just, and I just don't know if it was because I was teaching him wrong or he just didn't want to learn.
I didn't know flip phones had recorders in them for messages. Right. Good point.
Clever.
Too simple.
There's a piece of this story about resistance to learning new things that I think has something to do with how long of a future a person perceives. And if you see a long and nebulous future in front of you, people are really open to learning and exploring. But when you're beginning to see things come to the end, then people do tend to want to focus on what they know and what they're familiar with, savor the good things, including people and relationships, but not so much explore and go out and do new things, really because the payoff doesn't seem to be great if your future is short. And I think that's true for an awful lot of changes we see with aging.
So as you get older, there are declines, mm-hmm. right? And they start, I guess, when you're 20.
23.
Mm. Is it that precise? Aww. Wow.
It's been going on for a while.
I always hear this about sort of normal aging versus dementia. Mm-hmm. And so normal aging means you forget people's names, and dementia means you forget more.
Yeah, forget that you forgot people's names. Mm. Dementia is a disease, and there are a lot of different kinds of dementia, but the most common dementia is Alzheimer's disease that accounts for half of them. And it is a pernicious, horrible, awful disease that essentially steals from a person everything they know and who they know and ultimately even knowledge about themselves and other people. Early symptoms of dementia are things like forgetting your keys, forgetting somebody's name. And those are early symptoms, but those are also part of normal aging. Huh. And so there's even some talk about having a new phobia in the diagnostic manual for phobias of dementia, because we all forget. Yeah. Forgetting is extremely common.
No, I get this. There was I was forgetting people's names, and I was beginning to worry. And then I realized I've never been able to remember people's names.
There's also a great study suggesting that name finding, because that's what we forget more than other words even, it's names, has no correlation with dementia.
Oh, no way.
Good news.
Wow, that's interesting. Oh, boy. Yeah.
So two things are happening, though. We have a risk of disease that's going up as we get older, and the risk is going up every decade. So we can, our risk gets greater to get dementia the older we get, but we also have this process of normal aging, and forget more information, what happened yesterday. It's harder to remember where we learned something. It's called source memory, and so we kind of know something but can't remember where it was we learned it. This can be risky if you are getting information from a lot of sources, some of them fake news.
Right.
And you go, yeah, I heard that. I can't remember. Great and you forget point. Where it was. And so there are changes that occur with age that are unwelcome, and we should be concerned about finding ways to address them.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Mary Lee Opezzo. We're speaking with Laura Carstensen, and she's going to tell us about brain training.
Or is there a way to keep me cognitively vigorous? Mm. In the normal process of
cognitive
aging.
Yoga,
yes. So brain training first. Brain training emerged as a multi-billion-dollar industry about a decade ago, and there are a lot of people sitting in front of their computers playing games on the computer in order to improve their cognitive prowess, in order to get smarter and ward off dementia. There is zero evidence for warding off dementia. I mean, none at all.
Wow.
People who have high levels of education are not showing the same kind levels of decline as others. And the other thing that you can do, if it's too late for you to get a lot more education now in your life, exercise. Mm. Exercise improves cognitive functioning, and appears to be related to lower levels of dementia as well, lower rates of dementia. So it's the best thing you can do for aging right now.
Exercise in terms of like high intensity interval training, in terms of just walking around the house or lifting weights?
Most of the research has been done on aerobic activity, so mm-hmm. walking, running. But there are some studies on strength training too, and it looks like that also predicts.
So one of my favorite studies, it was trying to test sort of the effects of knowledge on working memory. It took people who listened to 5 minutes of baseball broadcast, and it took older people and younger people. Older people, sort of their short-term, their cognitive working memory, less. Younger people, and then people who knew baseball and didn't know baseball. So you're young, old, you know baseball, you don't know baseball.
2x2, got it, okay.
So if you're young and you know baseball, you can repeat what was in that 5 minutes, the best. If you're old and you know baseball, you beat a young person who doesn't know baseball in remembering what happened. So the value of education is it gives you more knowledge, and this knowledge is sort of what carries you forward, as opposed to brute horsepower.
Right. Wow, that's interesting.
Right. And you also point to something else, and that is we think about cognitive performances going down with age, is declining. There are two kinds of intelligence that we study. One is fluid, new learning, and the other is called crystallized intelligence. What do you know about baseball? What are the facts that you know? And crystallized intelligence is going up as long as we live. Oh. Fluid intelligence is what people are talking about is going down, and there is evidence for that declining. Memory and processing of new information, it's very possible that they have to be working together, right? So right. If you have a lot of crystallized knowledge, it's easier for you to remember and learn new things about that domain.
So the implication is front load your learning.
But exercise is doing something that's mm-hmm. making organs function better. Yeah. It's keeping us stronger. It's keeping us more alert. It benefits emotion. So exercise is a magic bullet at this point.
So square dancing. Square dancing.
Yes.
I'm learning.
Yeah, you're exercising, highly social dynamic, so a lot of attentional control, and you're trying to listen to instruction simultaneously, and it's fun, it's motivating, and motivation sounds like the issue.
Old people are always the best dancers because they've been doing it longer.
Oh, wow.
So they have that.
There's the crystallized
They practice during the week, so it means, you know, you're doing dishes with your partner, and you're spinning around the kitchen,
that's
great exercise.
That's
too.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's really
good.
Awesome.
And it keeps you happy.
On that note, we're going to have you back in. Thank you so much, Laura Carstensen, and thank you for listening to School In with Dan Schwartz and Mary Lee Opezzo. If you missed any part of this episode, you can listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app, iTunes, and even SoundCloud. Thank you.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.